You're listening to episode 88 of the Forest Podcast, recorded Thursday, March 31st, 2011. Dinosaurs and Aliens. Welcome to the Forest Podcast. I'm Mike Evans.
I'm Kenneth Love.
And we are your daily tech design and development power thirst.
Yes.
Which is, I guess, some random drinks that
I'll send it to you later. It's those who have been on the internet for a while and who you'll probably know about it. It's mainly because it has the line, "When God gives you lemons, you get a new God."
That's outrageous.
And today on the show, for a little interview and then links later, we've got Kennedy, who he's from Forest, but during South by on the way to South by Southwest and during South by Southwest, he was on the startup bus producing Lemonade Stand.
He's the only person I met at South by Southwest who I actually had to look up to. He's a tall fellow. So Kennedy,
I'm glad we're not doing this together live because I'd feel really awkward.
Kennedy, what's up, man? What's going on?
Not much. Another glorious winter day here in spring of New York.
Winter? Nice, because I usually like to be anywhere but Detroit, but it's actually about like 48 here, so it's kind of warm.
Nice.
So what have
you... shorts on.
Hmm?
I'm going to put the shorts on.
Oh, I got them on right now.
Shorts?
I'm under right. Dozens of lights. So what have you been doing since South by Southwest?
It's 72 here, just in case you're wondering.
Now you're just bragging.
Sorry.
Discombobulation. So tell us about the startup buses, how you got to South by Southwest.
Startup bus was an awesome experience. I highly recommend it to anybody. Let me just give you like a brief of everything.
Yeah. No, I don't think anybody has, none of our listeners have ever heard of Startup Bus and they need the full synopsis.
All right. So this is the second year of the Startup Bus. And last year, it was just from New York to Austin. This year, it was from New York, Austin, or New York, Miami, Chicago, Cleveland, Palo Alto, San Francisco. That's it.
Wait, it's multiple buses or you just made all those stops?
No, multiple buses.
That'd be a very long road trip.
That'd be a very long trip. Yeah, so it was like 48 hours that we took to go down there. And we had 48 hours to come up with an idea, build the idea, and launch the idea.
So when you get on the startup bus, do you know everyone ahead of time, or do they match you up? How does that work?
So there's like 30 people on the bus, and I've never met anybody else on the bus before. And then the first thing you do is everybody stands up to the front of the bus and introduces themselves and what they're capable of doing. So, and then shortly after that, then everybody goes up and starts pitching some ideas that they might have. And then right after that, then you kind of break off into teams, whatever, you know.
So it's kind of like Lord of the Flies on a bus.
Yeah.
Whoever excites you, you get to...
Traveling at 60 miles an hour on a closed area, going to a place full of booze.
Yes.
They awesome. Take away all your sharp objects before you get on the bus, right?
Yeah, yes, they do. And they give us Red Bull instead, so.
That's probably good.
Red Bull was one of our sponsors, and each of us got like 15 cans
God.
Red Bull a day.
Are you sleeping yet?
I didn't take my first nap until 52 hours.
Wow.
And then when I took my nap, it was like a 10-minute nap. So
that's a pretty good.
What he doesn't know is that his teammates were actually standing over him, pouring Red Bull into him as he slept.
Yeah, it was probably just it was a little intravenous drip by that point. I'm sure.
Yeah.
So you guys came up with something that's a lemonade stand. Whose idea was that on your team?
The original idea, the base of the idea, came from Jonathan. John came up with the idea that wanted to sell things on mobile and make it quick and easy. And then from there, we had seven people on our team. The Android developer, we had an iOS developer, we had a PR marketing content writer, we had Jonathan, which he does backend as well, and we had a front-end and back-end guy.
And you.
And then me, which I did the design of the logo and the apps.
Okay.
And then then we also had... person an API, so
cool. I like the logo, but the first time I saw it, I thought this app was for photography.
Yeah,
got, like a lens.
Got the aperture thing in there.
Yeah.
The original I designed it. I figured it'd be like I designed it in probably like 30 minutes with a bouncing bus. So
no, it's
No, you should see the things I've drawn today. You.
Yes, I saw what Mike drew earlier today. Yours actually looks like something. Mike's was just kind of this random squiggle.
The idea was like a lemon slice with, you know, an aperture feeling to it. So like a lemon with a twist, if you say, I guess.
So this is kind of like I'm at home, I've made something, and I immediately want to sell it. Like it's locational aware, or how does it work?
Yeah, so I'll give you the perfect example. So when we were South by, someone wanted to sell their badge, and they didn't want to take a picture of it, take out their card from their camera, put the card in the computer, log into Craigslist, upload the photo. You know, it's right. A process. So all we did was just simply took a open the app, take a picture, write a description, price, click post, and it's done. It's up. It's on the market. So yeah, just a quick, easy way to sell things. So
it is locational aware, or I would have to search for that area or whatnot?
It's geolocation. Okay. It's based on geolocation. So whenever you search the marketplace, it's searching within a certain mile radius of where you're located.
I got to say, this sounds a whole hell of a lot more useful than color.
Yeah. When are you guys taking your $40 million in funding?
41.
Someone offers it.
As soon as someone offers it. Yeah, no questions asked.
I think if someone comes up to you and says, I'd like to give you $40 million to build what you're building, you pretty much just take it, right?
I think if anybody offered me $40 million, I'd probably do anything they wanted to. So
you might not want to say that on the air. Too late now, though.
$40 million.
Yeah, you might get some interesting emails.
You never know.
So where are you guys taking Lemonade Stand? I see that it's on Android currently.
Yes, it's currently Android.
But there's a giant iPhone on the website.
Yeah. So,
well, but you said you had an iOS developer. So, has it been, if not submitted to the App Store, is it like in process of getting it ready to be submitted, or is that not planned, or what?
So we had a strong push from the start of us. So everybody was, you know, working really hard to get everything done. And then as soon as we got to South by, things slowed down a lot.
Kind of just disappeared.
Yeah. beer was the main priority. We're hopefully going to plan to finish up the native apps, but as a last resort or as a second option, we're planning maybe just doing something just HTML5 cross cross mobile. So
yeah, so that'll work everywhere.
Yeah. I think we're trying to steer to that right now, just because of the fact that we don't have a dedicated dedicated native developers right now. So, which is, you know, sad,
you got to go 37 Signals way and just badmouth all native things and say that web is the only way to do it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
This is very true. I like that approach. So, it's not because we can't afford to pay somebody, just because we don't believe in native apps.
That's right.
Not because we're too cheap to hire somebody with the required skills.
Right.
Exactly.
Not that at all. So, okay, you mentioned that you guys had like iOS developers and Android developers, and you said you had backend. What was your backend built on?
It's Ruby on Rails.
Ruby on Rails? That's cool.
Yeah, our API is based, if you look at our API, it's you can see that it's quickly pumped out, and it's pretty awesome. Awesome fact about our API, after launching, within 8 hours of launching our public API, someone built a Windows 7 app.
Oh, already fun. Nice.
Yeah, some guy in New York. He's my hero. So
you're only you're one of your native people is someone who just wrote a Windows app thing for it,
and a whole like five people in the world will be able to use it.
Yeah,
awesome.
Yeah.
I like there was an article we were reading a few days ago talking about .NET developers, and the guy was like, "If you're using .NET, we don't know why you are, and the numbers say you're not doing it to make phone apps."
Yeah, pretty much. No, I think Lemonade Stand looks really cool. I don't know. It seems definitely better focused for small stuff than like Craigslist or whatever. So, I don't know. Good luck with it.
Yeah, appreciate it. We're going to push forward. And
I think this thing will kick ass in dorms. Like, in your dormitory, I'm selling this book and it goes out to the 3,000 kids in your area.
Yeah.
I love it,
and you don't have to pay the bookstore prices,
right?
That's a good idea. So write it down.
You're working on a second project also that we kind of talked at length about last night, and they're starting up a podcast.
Yeah. Starting up KQ Web Show. We're starting off our first podcast as like a morning show. And the host is Kevin Quinn. He's a professional radio DJ. And
so does he have like a soundboard and like Dingo and the Baby type stuff?
Yeah, I'm sure he does. he's a super talented guy, and he's been in the business for he's had morning shows in very populated areas and stuff. So I think we're just gonna give it a shot on the web. And
is it gonna be tech?
I think the morning show will be more of like the way I look at it is me being in New York. I listen to my podcast like every morning I go to work, and I don't listen to the radio anymore, but I miss stupid news, and I kind of miss like current events. I don't watch the news at night. Just I'd rather work, I guess. So if I had this like 5-10 minute podcast that could, brighten my day and cheer up my day and, fill me in on some world news and current events, I guess. And
cool. So yeah. Are you guys on Kickstarter or anything like that where you might want some of our audience to go throw you some cash?
Yes, that'd be incredibly awesome. We got approved yesterday, but we had to change our change something little tiny about it, and it should be getting launched today or tomorrow. But we're gonna post a link on the website, which is kqwebshow.com.
Which I think you've been posting on DeForest, which is also cool.
Yeah, I've been posting. The mockups I've been doing, and I pretty much finished up the site last night, and I should be launching sometime this week with it.
Groovy. Oh.
Yeah, pretty excited about it.
Let's see, anything else you'd like to talk about or tell people?
Not that time. That's pretty much it. I mean, I have lots of other projects that I'm working on, but that's pretty like the main projects.
Cool.
Yeah. Awesome. I have a question for you, because I want to find out, and I'm conceited or whatever. A few weeks ago, you were watching my Django videos and asking for help on that. Are you using Django or planning to?
I would like to. I have several friends here in New York that use a lot, and that's kind of why, like, how I fell into it. And then,
bye bye Rails.
But no, I enjoy it so far. I do, and your videos, they really help.
Cool.
Thank you for those, actually. I agree.
Yeah, no, not a. I need to finish.
I even donate some money to you because I appreciated it so much.
Yeah, I know.
You're the one.
I showed it to my wife. She was like, "Oh, that's cool. That's nice."
She said, "How cute."
I think. Let's see. I think I brought in like a total of like $13 from those. So, woo!
Wow.
Over the year,
you can go buy like a pack of Legos or something.
Yeah, I can get like a pizza delivered. So, should we get to the links?
I guess we should, jump into the links.
All right. So we've got a few.
Yes.
Not a huge amount. But
not our biggest show ever.
No. Smashing Magazine.
Smashing. I can't even do it anymore. Smashing. Like, it just seems like
I know. Well, we're just thinking, yesterday we were doing the office hours for Forrest, and Kyle said, think vitamin. And it seriously took me a minute to figure out what website he meant.
Who the hell is that?
I was like, what? Think vitamin. Oh, vitamin. Yes. Right. No. Smashing Magazine, speeding up your website's database.
I see the title on this. Does it just underneath it just say indexing? And that's it?
That's a major part of it. Yeah. Okay. There's a whole bunch of explanation stuff on here. So, because it's from Smashing Magazine, right?
Yes.
There's always an insane amount of stuff. They've got things on like how to find what your slow queries are and how to time stuff, which is very important. I mean, that's obviously how you find what you need to fix. But the first thing that they actually say for how to fix things is indexing your database tables. It's amazing how much putting an index on something speeds it up. Something else that they don't mention, but I'm going to bring this up. Make sure that you're not doing queries inside of queries if you can avoid it. Joins are okay. I mean nested queries. Like select, and then inside the select you have another select statement.
Right.
It's amazing how much that slows down queries. Well, I was working on an e-commerce site one time. We had a query that took 11 seconds. It had a nested query. 11 seconds. It had a nested query. We took the nested query out and turned it into a left join as it should have been in the first case, in the first place, and it went down to less than a millisecond.
That's ridiculous.
Wow. It's an amazing amount of change.
Was that a site that Chris had made? Is that what was going
on? No, it was a site that was actually made in India.
Oh. Well, and, I could see Chris over in India.
I could too, and that actually that would be kind of funny. I'd like to see him over in India, but no, this was one of our sites. This wasn't something we built, but it was something that we fixed. By God, Chris Coyer over at CSS Tricks.
Coyer, we need to get Coyer on the show.
We do need to, but only when Zach is on.
Yes,
and Chris, so that they can have some sort of battle. CSS Tricks, hover on everything but. This was actually, I thought this was really cool, and it's something I hadn't really thought of before. Sometimes you have an interface where maybe you've got, like, his example is like Twitter, like a tweet. And you've got the tweet, and you want the tweet to be there, but then whenever somebody hovers over the tweet, you want, like, some new nav to pop up, right? Which that's not really that big of a deal. But then whenever you hover over one of those nav items, the others should fade themselves back. So you can tell which one is selected. Right. So he goes about showing you how to do that with a bit of fancy CSS 3 stuff that I bet probably doesn't work in IE at all.
It's funny, the comments, a lot of people always comment on, I always feel so bad for him because he's saying, this doesn't work on IE6. It's like he's trying something completely new.
Right.
Obviously, it's with CSS 3. I mean, come on.
Right. Well, I mean, he does say in the last paragraph, and yes, old you-know-who browsers don't do hover on anything but anchor links. If it's mission-critical, use JavaScript to detect mouse enter events on them and apply or remove class names. But, I mean, it's... I know there are so many people that feel like they have to support old browsers or that want to support old browsers or whatever, but really, come on, guys.
I just want him to become really conceited and change it to CSS Illusions.
CSS Illusions? That would be absolutely awesome. I'm actually
tricks are for whores, right?
Yes, that's what tricks are for whores, Michael.
Yes, tricks are what whores do
for money. Yes.
Yeah, but God, I love that show. I'm tempted to go register CSSillusions.com right now. Actually,
I have to wait until you have to do it before we publish.
Yeah, I know. All right, tell us about the next one.
Micro event, JS micro event hover. No. What? What is this?
Do you even know? Micro event.js. Okay, so sometimes you have events that you want to transmit, right? So you're using events to trigger things. You have an event driven design, and you need the events to be emitted either every X number of seconds or whenever something happens or whatever. It's kind of a pain in the ass to have to tie that to like a DOM element or anything like that. So microevent.js is an event emitter. All it does is send out this trigger statement basically over and over and over again as often as you want it to. And it's 20 lines of code. It's a tiny little micro event thing. So maybe you're doing like a cron job in JavaScript to find out if any new tweets have come in or if anybody has joined a group or played a card in a game or something like that, right?
Mm.
This would be your game loop inside JavaScript.
Right. When I read emitter, the only thing I could think of was like particles or something for video.
Well, I guess it could send out events that spawn particles.
Oh, I was just saying that.
If you wanted.
That's what confused me, man.
I got you. I understand.
I like this next one, though.
You like the next one?
Yeah, detect three-finger swipe gestures in Safari with HTML5 history API.
I saw this one, and then like the same day I found out if you're using Chrome and you go to about colon flags, there's a flag you can turn on that makes a three-finger swipe do like expose for your tabs.
Oh, that's cool.
Yes. And so I was like, oh, that's awesome.
But I like the title because it throws you off. You're like, okay, yeah, three-finger swipe gestures. That makes total sense. And then you're like, wait, with the history API?
Right. No, this is actually really cool. So the idea is that you tie into this multi-touch in Safari. As far as I know, it only works in Safari. That's all he mentions. And what it does is it'll basically trigger the history API. So you can use the three-finger swipe, like left or right, to move backwards and forwards in a gallery or right. something if you wanted to. So yeah, it's kind of cool.
Very handy.
Yeah. Makes it a little bit more intuitive of an interface, I guess. Makes it more desktop-like as well.
Yep.
If you're trying to do the whole... It's not a website. It's a real app.
This next site we've talked about a few times, though. Fonts and Use.
Have we? Have we?
Yeah,
we have.
Yes.
Yes, we have. They're awesome.
But these still look pretty. I want to go to F8.
Well, yeah, this is really nice. And I actually really like this idea. So F8 is a Facebook conference that happened a little while back. I'm not sure exactly when. Last year, I guess. And so they wanted to do something different with their badges. Badges, I mean, you guys went to South by Southwest. You saw the badges. Were they exciting, amazing, wonderful badges?
I saw them from afar around people's necks.
I second that.
Yeah. So they obviously weren't exciting enough for you to go up and go, dude, let me see your badge.
Right. These right. I would, though. These look great.
These are cool. Yeah. These are really nice. So they came up with this this design, and it's basically like if you've seen the softback Moleskines, it basically looks like one of them. They're kind of small, like a Field Notes.
Right.
Field Notes kind of
notebook. I have one in my hand.
Right. It's basically the same shape as one of those. Looks like it's a little bit smaller. Has a hole punched in the corner to put onto a lanyard. But the inside is what makes it really cool. The inside has like a welcome to the conference, kind of tells you what's going on. It's got a daily agenda set out in there with shit being color-coded.
It's so even got like, a timeline.
Yeah, you can be like, oh, I want to go to all the new tool stuff. So you can find all the orange stuff or whatever, right? It's got a little timeline showing you what the events are going to give you more detail about what the events are going to be about. Has a little map of the city and nearby restaurants, which is really handy. And then the thing that I thought was really cool is on the back it has a map for you to be able to find your
right.
way around.
And when I see this is when I hear people say, like, print is dead and stuff. And I look at this and I go, this is so much cooler than a fucking iPhone app, right? This is awesome.
Yes. Well, and it being tactile makes it to where it's something that people are going to, like, keep around. If you
right.
had an iPhone app that was for
it's uninstalled.
This conference, you're going to, yeah, as soon as you go home, you're going to ditch it because you don't need it anymore.
But this thing,
you're going to keep.
This is on your wall. This is on your tack board.
Right, but this proves what I think is going to happen to print. I think print as it is now and has been in the past, where it's this massive, huge industry, is going to go away. And it's going to become this very niche but awesome industry to where they're doing very personal things.
Liz would love to hear that.
Right. But I really do. I think that's what's going to happen. Because, I mean, there's no way you could make a business, a full-time, keep-you-fed-and-in-the-house-all-year-long business out of printing these booklets.
I don't know, like...
unless you charge a fuck of a lot for them, and then nobody's going to buy them.
But what was the girl that you were talking to who ended up doing the wedding thing, right? What wedding cards are fucking expensive if you're getting them done.
Yes, but that's a side project. She's not doing that
no,
full time.
No, but I'm talking about the printers.
Yeah, I mean, some of it, sure. But I don't know. I don't think it's... I think the industry as a whole is going to shrink.
Right.
I mean, it's not going to go away. It's just going to get smaller.
I think it's going to get smaller, and people are going to start charging, you know, outlandish prices.
Yes. Similarly, because it's not going to be as in demand as it was,
right.
So they have to make up for it.
I'm wondering the day, I bet it's already happened, where somebody's getting married and the invitation is like an app. What the hell is that?
That was a motorcycle going by.
Damn you and your open windows.
It's hot here. I can't help it.
But it's like, you know, this is the Jen and Mike are getting married, or I guess Mike and Jim are getting married since we want to be equal opportunity, or Jen and Jen are getting married. You can marry yourself. I'm going to stop talking. But you get your iPhone app that's like, hey, we're getting married. Click this button to RSVP. Click this button to tell us what type of chicken you want. Click, you know, and that's your wedding invitation.
Right. Yeah, it'll be this online digital thing.
Somebody should make that. I just made an industry right there.
That's you did. Cool. That means you need to go build the site for it before we publish this episode.
All right.
Oh, our next link's not even working anymore.
Sad trombone. No.
That's so sad.
I'll throw one.
Yeah, there's this website, fytojs.com, and it's not up anymore.
Was it up when we put
really
the
sad.
Link in? Is that what this
it
is
was
about?
Up when I put the link in, and
oh,
it
no.
was actually really funny. basically what the site was just a big banner that says, fuck you, turn on JavaScript.
And that, like, people didn't get that joke?
People didn't get the joke. People thought it was upsetting, and the guy who created it didn't want to deal with the drama of it. So
upsetting? How does it, like...
I don't know.
I couldn't sleep at night because I saw the site.
Dude, people get upset about the dumbest fucking
things. Fuck these
things.
People.
But it was funny. It was basically, you know, all these people build... Developers go through huge hurdles to make sites work without JavaScript, right?
Right.
And there's really not much point these days, except for where it concerns accessibility.
Mm-hmm. I think we've been saying, fuck you, turn on JavaScript for the past 6 months.
Yeah. I mean, you know, your site still needs to be accessible without JavaScript. I should still be able to get to all the data without JavaScript. But there's no reason to make it to where all your awesome bells and whistles work with right. or without JavaScript.
You don't get to
right?
see the dancing bear without JavaScript.
Right. Fuck you, turn on JavaScript. So, I'm sad. If the fuck you, turn on JavaScript guy listens to the show, know that you have support from Mike and I.
The Force is with you.
Yes, the Force podcast is with
Kennedy, you. What's your feeling on this?
I'm with you guys.
All right.
It's unanimous.
It's the trifecta.
Kyle officially supports it now. All right, so bulletproof Node.js coding from Stella Lorenzo.
Bulletproof, no.
Bulletproof, man. You can't shoot it. It's completely.
But you can blow it up.
You can blow it up. This is really long. We're not even going to dig into all the little bits that are in here, but there's just a lot of like some of the stuff that's being recommended is using like CoffeeScript or Node fibers. CoffeeScript is kind of there to make it like easier to write JavaScript because you're not writing JavaScript, you're writing CoffeeScript, which is more like Ruby or Python or really even PHP to some degree, Lisp, other kinds of small talk languages. So you don't have to deal with the weirdness of JavaScript. Or NodeFiber, which makes it to where you can write asynchronous code in like your normal imperative style of JavaScript. So you can get out of the synchronous mindset that most people write JavaScript in. Like, if you're writing jQuery stuff, right? You're used to writing synchronous JavaScript. This event happens, and then this, and then this, and then this. Node is more asynchronous, so it doesn't necessarily work as well if you're writing it that way.
I think it needs to stop being greedy. Like, why can't you just wait your turn?
Nah, I guess so. But, you know, you're trying to bring out this, like, totalitarian fascist state where all your processes are lining up in a bread line to get called.
Look, so. Man, that's how you get on roller coasters. You gotta wait.
But does that make it good? Do you enjoy sitting
yeah,
there?
Yeah, it's the anticipation. Once you finally get in there, they're like, oh, man, I'm about to go.
But you only get to ride, like, 3 rides in the day.
See,
you, you go to Disney World and you ride, like, 3 things, and then, oh, sorry, kids, it's midnight.
See, we have Cedar Point, and what you do is you go, like, mid-October when it's just starting to get a little bit chilly out but and children are still in school and everything, and I have went and, like, gotten on rides 4 times in a row. It's awesome.
Right. By a little bit chilly, you mean it's like still
it's,
above
it's
freezing.
Drizzling and 60 degrees out.
So anyway, he's got 10 steps. Return on the last statement. Put your callbacks in sequence. Define a respond function for complex logic. So on and so forth. Not going to read all of those. But if you're worried that you're not writing Node.js in a good way, go read this very, very long
I'm
blog
worried
post.
That I'm not writing Node.
Yeah, I keep trying to like write it, and then I can just never fucking find a good resource.
Ooh, ooh.
It's really. I was trying to find one the other day, and everyone I found was out of date, even though it was only like 2 months old.
Dude, Peep Code is doing bulletproof. Fuck, what is it called? Backbone.js and another Node video. So I'm kind of excited.
Cool.
I'm gonna learn some shit.
So this next link specifically mentions Django, but the tips in here are not Django specific. I mean, the implementation is, but the general idea can be applied everywhere, and I thought they were really good ideas. It's from Mitch Fournier. Guess I'm saying that right.
Sure.
yeah. And so he's worked on some pretty cool stuff, but his tips make a lot of sense here, and some of them I thought people might not have thought of, but they're, I don't know, they're pretty cool. The first one especially, automatically add a no index to thin pages. So pages that don't have a lot of content on them, pages that may be like an archive page, or that's the best example I've got off the top of my head. Anyway, So on these pages, you want to add like a no index, which basically tells Google to just ignore this page. It'll right. still follow links from this page. It just won't index that page because really if someone lands on that page, they're not getting anything useful.
Well, wait, how does it still follow links on that page if it's not indexing that page to begin with?
Well, if anything that links to that page, Google will follow the link to that page. Uh-huh. Google sees the no index, and so it doesn't index that individual page, but it will still follow any links on that page to their locations.
Okay.
So it's basically telling Google just forget you came to this page, but keep going.
It's like you're playing a choose your own adventure and you have Alzheimer's.
Sure, something like that. He sets up like automatic 301 redirects for when page URLs change, which is important. Using a canonical meta tag so that you, in the head of every document, you have a canonical tag which tells Google and other search engines what the real URL for that page is. So even if the URL gets shortened or whatever, like, you know, in Forrest, we've got the public links, the, what is it, forr.st
yeah.
/ like 3 letters or 5 letters. Mm-hmm. So those are shortened URLs. Those are not canonical, but the long one with the actual slug is the canonical. That goes in the head. Google only cares about that URL. Any other links it finds for the shortened URLs, it still counts them as inbound links, but Google doesn't put those links in its database. So that's good. It means you have fewer links that show up for the same thing.
Right.
Which means that your pages that do show up have higher ratings.
Mad helpful.
Yes. And then the other stuff is about like general SEO stuff and analytics.
What is this unholy link you have on here next?
So anyway, that's the SEO tips. This next one is, you remember a few months ago we talked about having MySQL in Node?
Yes.
And we were like, this is a horrible idea. Or at least it seemed to us like a bad idea.
There's 127 people who use this.
Right, so now to further, and then two, three days ago we talked about the unholy library that Y contributed to that converted Ruby into Python.
Right.
This is now the worst thing I have ever found on the internet. It is phpjs.org, which lets you use PHP functions, because everyone wants to use PHP functions, in JavaScript. Did I just kill the both of you?
All the background noise has ceased because all the wildlife has fled from the area.
Yes. Yes, there are no birds tweeting outside the window anymore. I think they all dropped dead. I mean, it's basically like, you know, you got tired of JavaScript having somewhat predictable function names, and so you're like, you know what? I need PHP function names in here so I can forget which way needle and haystack goes.
It's kind of weird. I'm not even looking for an about on this page. I'm looking for a why.
Yes, I would appreciate a why as well. I don't know. I guess if you've used this one and you find it really useful, tell me, and then tell me where you live so I can find a mental hospital for you close by.
But we see the value in everything.
Yes, the value in this is to identify crazy people. That's the value in this one.
You know, the last time we told someone to never, ever, ever use this, they emailed us 20 minutes later.
Did they?
Yes. Her name was Sarah.
Maybe we can do that again. Never, ever, ever use PHPJS. I'd love for Sarah Hatter to come on and tell me I'm wrong. So Defunct, who is a GitHub employee.
Right.
So fun person to follow, has released jQuery pjax, which is push state plus ajax, which equals pjax. And it has a very lovely little ASCII art butler there. So pjax loads HTML from your server into the current page without a full reload. It's ajax with real permalinks, page titles, and a working back button that fully degrades. So...
Yay.
No, that's good. It's because a lot of people use ajax, and then they're doing this call that doesn't really exist. They have to go change the hashtag or whatever up in the URL. Your back button breaks, blah, blah, blah. It's not any fun to build.
Right.
This makes it much simpler. You're basically just loading bits of HTML.
I like the demo. The demo is dinosaurs and aliens.
Right. See? See? Yeah. I told you this was cool. You should have listened to me.
I said yay. I expressed my excitement.
You said yay in like a sarcastic way, though.
Oh.
I don't appreciate
it. Why doesn't my browser support PJAX? What the fuck?
I don't know. Why doesn't your browser support PJAX? What browser are you using?
Firefox on Ubuntu.
Well, there's your problem. I don't know. This is really cool, and this looks like a much better way of doing Ajax, to where you're just loading bits of new page content. You're not having to query, you know, some RESTful API or anything like that. So it's right. Like a really cool way to do this stuff. Go check it out. Go use it. CSS Pivot. This has been going around the interwebs for a little while. So CSS Pivot lets you add CSS styles to any website, which that's been done before, right? Everybody's like, ooh, whatever.
Who the hell uses CSS styles on websites? Dude, that's for print.
But the cool thing is you can now share your result with a short link. So if you're like, dude, look, I completely overhauled Twitter. I made it so much better. Right?
Right.
You can send out that URL, let other people decide if they think you made Twitter better or not.
And then wait for Twitter to call you to hire you.
Wait for Twitter to call you to hire you or tell you to stop doing that. If you combine this with what's a pretty common extension for most browsers, I know Chrome has one. I know, pretty sure Safari has one. I know Firefox has one, to where you can save custom user style sheets for any given URL. You can do your changes in CSS Pivot and then save those changes into that user style sheet. And then your changes are permanent as far as you're concerned.
They also have a Discover Pivots where you can go link and check them out.
Yeah, and they've got a bookmarklet so that you can launch CSS Pivot on any site that you want to. And then it looks like they're doing some Convor conversations as well if you need to get some help or bitch loudly or something like that. I guess. I don't know. That's my guess.
Who bitches softly? You're just like, I really
yeah, well, no,
like
I know.
This.
Nobody bitches softly. I'm just saying, you know, if that was your thing, you're like, oh, I'm going to be nice. All right, you're right. Nobody's going to be nice.
Oh, Canvas.
Oh! You were just waiting for that, weren't you?
Yes, I gotta show you my O face. Lumberg?
So, O Canvas is a JavaScript library intended to make development with HTML5 Canvas easier.
But not faster.
Because Canvas is never fast. Except for it draining batteries. Instead of working with pixels, you work with objects. It's very straightforward and easy to get started with. So they say.
So would you rather have your battery dealing with Canvas or Flash?
They both suck quite a bit, actually. neither?
You have to be abused at some point.
I have to pick one. Then I'm going to pick Canvas just because it's cool and new.
Pick Flash because then you'd at least be able to do everything else. You'd at least be able to look at videos I send you.
I feel like... I guess so.
Look at that. The first time we'll ever support Flash on this show.
Yeah, that's probably the only time I'm going to support Flash. But no, this looks nice, and it looks like it's definitely a better way of doing Canvas. I mean, I can actually look at like the code that's been written and understand what the hell's going on.
Nice.
I'm like, oh yeah, obviously, right. That's what I'm doing.
I like it. I'll try it out. I'll check it out.
Right. Yeah.
I'll check it out same way I check out Node and Backbone.
You'll open up a link and then close it like a week later when you realize you haven't read it yet.
Yep.
I do that a lot. The little MongoDB book.
Aw, it's so cute.
This is from the guy who did Mongly.com, Mongly is it's an interactive MongoDB tutorial.
Oh, okay.
Takes about 15 minutes, 20 minutes to go through. It's along the same lines of, what was it, Try Ruby,
right.
that Why the Lucky Stiff did, and Try Haskell. So, if you want to go learn Mongo, Mongly is a pretty cool way to do it. I went through most of it yesterday until he had some server issues, and it was pretty good. I felt like I understood some stuff. Carl Seguin is the dude's name, and he has freely released the little MongoDB book.
Comes at a respectable 32 pages.
Respectable 32 pages, because that's really all you need. He probably could have done it in 31, but
well, my question is,
I got to put a leaf on here.
Does it stop being respectable when it's over 32 or under 32?
I think it's under.
Under, okay.
And then I think at probably some point,
you're just completely far enough up.
Instead of being respectable, and now it just becomes ridiculous.
Creepy. No, creepy.
Well, that's an even further point. Yes, that's an even further point. It becomes creepy.
It's going to be as long as the Rails three-way.
The Rails three-way?
Yes.
I don't know that I want to know.
It's by Obi from Hash Rocket, and it's like 1,100 pages.
Yeah.
It's the same age as Bilbo.
I didn't need to know. Okay.
It's full of random shit today.
So anyway, yeah, if you're interested in learning a little bit more about MongoDB, but you're like, you know what, fuck those interactive tutorials, then go read this little book. I don't know if he covers everything that Mongo does. I don't know if he goes into like the geospatial stuff or anything like that. He mentions doing MapReduce, so I imagine it covers most of your average, everyday, usable MongoDB stuff.
Word.
Yeah, something like that. And last one for today, Cognition, the Happy Cog blog. That's kind of fun.
Happy Cog?
Happy Cog blog.
Happy Cog blog, yeah.
Happy. It could be like the Happy Clog. It's a Happy Clog. It's like when you flush Mr.
No more. I'm so sad. I looked through the comments. There's no Paul Irish on any of his stuff today.
Oh, what's up with that? Well, this guy's name is Ryan Ireland, and Ireland is almost like Irish, so...
There we go. It's honorary Paul Irish today.
It's the honorary Paul Irish. No, so the challenges of working remotely. Apparently, Happy Cog's Greg Hoy... we've reached the end of the show. I can no longer speak correctly. Did a South by Southwest session about company culture. And so apparently there was a discussion in there about working remotely. And so... You know, there are a lot of challenges to working remotely. You and I both work remotely, Mike. Yep. Do you work in an office, Kennedy?
Yes, I'm currently working in an office. I just started a new job last week, so.
Oh, well, then you're not part of this conversation.
No way. yeah.
But no, he talks about, like, you know, the quiet in the morning and...
Dude, I would work in an office if I got the chance, though, since Forrest is going to be at Dog Patch or whatever it's called.
Dog Patch is pretty awesome.
I've seen pictures.
I suppose you could move.
I could, but there's no fucking way I can afford New York. It's stupid.
Sure, you could.
with six roommates.
You could work on the corner.
All right, what were we talking about?
You might meet a nice young man, and you know he won't beat you like your current one.
This is wrong.
Is this wrong? No, so basically it's just the challenges of working alone. You know, you're basically by yourself. You have to deal with... you know, campfire or instant messaging or whatever to get communication. And it's, you know, it's just the general challenges that exist.
I don't think, I mean, I see these people saying that they have these challenges, but we don't, like, and then they're using campfire and all these little things. Like, on Forest, we just use email.
Well, I think a lot of
this works.
I think a lot of this is more people working in a company that has a traditional office setup, and then you have someone who works outside that office.
Well, right, we have...
Keith. It becomes a different mentality.
We have Kyle and Keith were working in office, and then me and Zach were remote.
Right, but you guys didn't start off all in an office.
No.
So it's a different kind of...
Okay.
It's slightly different kind of stuff.
And then we randomly bring you into O Hours.
And then you randomly bring me into O Hours. And I say, like, one thing to one person because no one else listens to the podcast. That was a little disappointing.
Hey, he said he enjoyed it, though.
He did, and then he had a snarky tweet about me this morning.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I have to go back and check it out.
It's all right. Whatever. Okay. That's our show for today.
That's it. Where can we find?
Our usual locations, forestpodcast.com, forestpodcast on Twitter, podcast@forest.com. Where can we find you, Kennedy, if somebody wants to stalk you?
Kennedy's Garage is my everything. So kennedysgarage.com, @Kennedy's Garage. So, yeah, anywhere. Yeah. Kennedy's Garage.
How do you spell your lemonade link, since Kenneth has such a hard time finding it?
LMND.ST.
See, you joke about me having a hard time finding it, but you try typing that in.
Dude.
I can barely spell it.
All I know is if we ever need to find you, Kenneth is usually at some sort of takeout stand.
Yeah, that's what it says.
Yeah.
That's the way it is.
That's it.
And that's our show for today. We'll talk to you guys later.
Next show, we'll have Elizabeth Turner on it. Should be
interesting. Man.
All right. That's the end.
Later, guys.